sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
We choose directly who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Your Borchini, and wouldn't you know, I wouldn't have the usual sound effects. My gosh, I was watching a special about honey badgers in Africa. Oh my gosh, you wouldn't believe how smart they are. Oh, there we go. Yeah, it's
not like that, but. Did they show it where the honey badger actually got bit or something, and then they just kind of lay around for 30 minutes, and then they recuperate from the poison?
Yeah. It's just, I mean, you can't keep them in or out of something. It's just unbelievable, and that was so funny. But we do have our guests. Cindy Smith with us. She's a crystal skull oracle. Works with Osh. I guess that's how you pronounce it. Osh, right?
Your skull? He allowed us to Americanize that to Osh. Yes,
Osh, okay.
He told me Osh, but he allows us to call him Osh.
Right. It's easier for. And first thing we'd like to do, as usual. Well, let's tell folks a little bit about the reading and for a minute, and then we'll get into yours. Hang on.
Okay.
Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklava Native American Church, or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us, and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now. And we appreciate any and all support to help us keep Prophecy Keepers on the air and
We've been around, I guess, since about 2004, and done a broadcast here or there. And I think we've got about 300 of them now, and let's try to keep it on the road. But what have you got for Cindy, Mark?
Well, in traditional Mayan calendar, Zulcan, she was born on a day called Ten Manik. And the ten, it can be written in dot bar, but it can also be written in head glyphs. And the head glyph for the number ten is a skull.
Well, there you go.
The Manik, the
it gets
number
more
ten has...
Pardon
the
me?
Ten,
it
the
does
number
get
ten
more
has a... The ten has an aspect of it of creativity, a lot of creativity and flowing of creativity, and the combined with the Manik, it has kind of healing energy. It's a symbol as a hand glyph, usually with the index finger and the thumb connected together, and that's actually also a Mayan number, nine, that would relate to the nine levels that you see in many of the pyramids. So that nine might come up to you in some of your work too as well. A lot of times the people with this particular glyph are kind of into healing. They also tend to have a maybe above normal good feeling of energy and feel pretty strong, you know, when they're in a forest. A lot of trees around. They usually do pretty good then. Might even start communicating with them. <You know>?
Yes. Yes.
So that, and I'm going to do the next part of reading is going to be in the sixth sun Zulcan for our coming cycle. And that's going to have three components to it: a forward flow of time, the way we normally look at time, backward flow, and then also a unity or zero point between the two time flows, where kind of like a fulcrum point or a zero point. So we'll go with the forward flow, which is the way we normally look at things. And it has to do with, this will probably be more prevalent going from your birth forwards. And it indicates, you know, a lot of energy that would be in the eagle and condor prophecy. It would be the condor energy, the kind of the Native American tribal family and heart energy. But it's going to be combined with a strong sense of kind of, you know, like a warrior, you know, fighting for justice and right things and all that. But it brings in an aspect of partnering energy here, not just a warrior, but also using art and creativity and stuff like that, kind of. So you may have had kind of these inclinations or something, possibly since birth. And it... on the other flow, coming backwards, so this is in the reverse, you know, going what we would think going from future back to us. This is stuff that may have been showing up more recently in your life, you know, say energies and since around 1997, 1998, a little bit before or after that maybe. And it has to do with purification of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And working with water, perhaps.
Yes.
And especially in relationship to the idea of bringing things together in a oneness.
Yes.
I wouldn't doubt if you had some kind of visions or something of that, maybe that involves a sphere.
Yes.
And as a partnering energy here of the reed, which brings in prophecy and the bridging of like heaven and earth, and it's sitting in the Eek cycle, which is Blue Otter's glyph, the Eek wind and spirit glyph. It's a symbol of a T cross. And if you put this particular glyph and yours and his together, which yours is the 10th day of this particular cycle, then you would have wind, and then your glyph would go to water. You'd have wind and water, which brings up someone a long time ago that was called the Lord of the Wind and the Water here in the Americas, South America, Central America, also known as Quetzalcoatl, Kukulcan, or various other names. So that this particular day sign, though, also I happen to know is related to one of the white buffalo calves, particularly the one that was born on August, I believe, 20th, 1994, the first one born in Janesville, Wisconsin, named Miracle. So that may be something that might, if you don't know about it, it might be worth exploring, because there might be something in that for you. Let me see if I can find anything more about that. Just give me a second here. It may be connected to possibly Venus, too, as well, in a way. I'm not sure why. I don't know why. Maybe that makes sense to you, but I...
That would be the aspect of the goddess, yes.
So, you might, in this particular case, the white buffalo calf woman. So you might want to go learn about that if you don't know already. Now, where these two come together, where your kind of warrior condor energy and the water purification energy is merging together in the zero point thing, you have one that's about balance. So this is the thing that's bridging the worlds for you, moving from one world to the next. It helps you, but also anyone around you. And it's about the completion of power, releasing power, balance, correct actions, liberation of stuff. And it's partnering kind of energy that's working with all that. The balance is peace. And it's actually sitting in a peace cycle. So that would be balance and peace is probably a fairly big aspect of you moving from where you're at and moving into the next world cycle, I would guess. And it's a green color. So if you see stuff with color green, it's going to relate to that. That makes sense.
What do you think about all that?
There's so much synchronicity. I enjoyed very much this information that you have shared with me. I actually left the 9-to-5 world, what I call the 9-to-5 world, in February of 94. So I find the introduction of that particular white buffalo calf in August of 94 to be very synchronistic. Also, Osh came to us in August of 2004, and I heard Blue Water say that he's had this radio program since 2004. So much synchronicity here in what you're talking about, and even the involvement of Quetzalcoatl, which I don't know a lot about, but when you see him in form as dragon, which the Hopis might see him in a dragon form, dragons have recently begun working with me in a very powerful way. So everything you're sharing with me is very synchronistic, very, very much part of who I am, very much part of the work that they have me do with them and for them.
Wow, that's I know it's our guests are usually really shocked about just how appropriate the readings are to what they've been doing and why they do it and everything. So, well, why don't you tell us start at the beginning. Tell us how you got into this work and what you've done and whatever you can squeeze into about an hour.
Okay. My husband and I have had our business for about 29 years, and our business involved working 32 to 36 weekends a year, usually at events that people would know as psychic fairs. They're not usually called that anymore. They're called spirit fairs or spirit body soul fairs. We end up traveling about 32 weekends a year to do those events. We travel into Texas, Arkansas, Missouri, Kansas. We usually stay fairly local, but we travel quite a bit. And for the first great part of our business, I wanted absolutely nothing to do with skulls. I wouldn't even shop at a place where skulls were sold. I was determined that I would not work with them, would not have anything to do with them. At that time, the number one business that we did on our circuit was Kansas City, and the people in Kansas City would literally come to our booth and beg, "Cindy, when you come here next, please bring skulls. We are studying skulls in class. We need skulls to work with. Please bring them when you come." And for 2 years, I devotedly ignored everything they were asking of me. After about 2 years, I had the talk with me, and I said to myself, "Cindy, these are your friends. You cannot treat them this way. You cannot ignore them." So I called our primary merchandise supplier. I said to him, "When we are there next, I have to buy skulls. Please have them ready." And when we walked through the door, there was one on the shelf that we both, my husband and I both, instantly fell in love with. And I began my process, my journey of working with skulls. After a time, some time passed, and our primary supplier, skull supplier at that time, lived in Arkansas, a short distance out of Conway, and he decided that he wanted to have a big event in his hometown. He was connected to Nick Nocerino, the man who had the ancient skull Shana Ra, and Nick promised him if he had an event in his hometown that Nick would come to the show and bring the ancient skull Shana Ra. Well, 2 weeks before the show, Nick died, and before his death, he arranged that a mutual friend of his and our supplier would come to the show and would bring Shana Ra. So at this show in Conway, where there were no people attending, I got to spend a lot of quality time with Shana Ra. And after the show was over, I was very happy to learn that at a show we were doing a few months away, the ancient skull Max would be there. So I called and I booked my appointment with Max. And when it came time to do that show, it was Thanksgiving weekend. And it turned out that Joanne, the lady who escorts Max, would rather be with her family than with us on Thanksgiving weekend. So Max was a no-show. And I pouted for a while. And then I put it out to the universe, "Please bring me equal Max or better." And I asked that skull, that ancient skull, would come to me in a way that was affordable and enjoyable and convenient and would come to me in all the right ways. So a few months go by, and the guy from Conway calls, and he says, "I have a chance to buy the ancient jade skull that you learned about at the conference in Conway." And he said to me, "Would you like to partner?" I responded that I needed to think about it, so I hung up the phone and literally said to myself, "Think about it." So I called him back and said, "Yes." Some time goes by, and it was time for us to kick off that transaction to bring in that ancient jade skull. And the guy that we were supposed to be partnering with did not have his money. And quite shockingly to me, we did have the money to kick off the transaction. So I told him, "We'll start it, and then when you get your money in, you can catch up with us. You can pay in equal to whatever we've paid at that point, and then everything will be on track with the partnership." So we sent the money to start the transaction, and they sent Osh to us. It was a very interesting process for me. Before he came, I had two skulls that worked with me in depth and told me all about Osh, told me his name, that his name is spelled K-H apostrophe O-S-H, that the K-H on the front is the sound of lightning. And since most people cannot pronounce the sound of lightning, we should call him Osh. And as I said earlier, he allowed me to Americanize that to Osh. I believe that his name actually is the whooshing sound that lightning makes when it moves through the air. They talked to me in depth about, there were 8 to 9 of these jade skulls in the grave that Osh came out of. And all of them have the same writing on their heads. They all look very much alike. The differences basically are artistic. So they began to tell me that 4 of the skulls were carved, 4 of these jade skulls were carved as symbols of authority. So that if you were at some kind of sacred event, some kind of sacred ceremony, and you thought you were seeing the sacred skull, you were probably seeing a duplicate because 4 of them were carved as duplicates. He said that they told me that the 4 that were carved as symbols of authority, one went to Africa, one went to India, one went to the Asian territories, and one went to Guatemala. I found that Guatemala thing to be very specific, very interesting. And within 24 hours of Osh arriving, there was a special on television about a new temple that had been found in Guatemala. I know that Osh has been all over the world. He has shown me many different things. He has shown me whirling dervishes. When we drive from one location to another frequently, he will show me, having been in that location with various Native American peoples. He has shown me things like that over and over. He has shown me flying in a spaceship. He's shown me many things about places that he's been. And sometimes he will show me that as a living, breathing being, he was here, he saw this. And other times he will show me, as a skull, I was there, I saw that. It took me a long time to understand how to put those puzzle pieces together in my mind. And eventually I came to understand that Osh, as an evolved spiritual being, chose that his spirit or his consciousness would be encoded into this jade artifact, this ancient jade skull, for us to recover so that he would be here to help us, to guide us at this time. It's been a very interesting, very profound experience for me. I feel very blessed to have been part of it, and I feel that everything that I did prior to this prepared me for this role. One time, probably 25 years ago, long before we became involved with skulls, we were in a study group on a Sunday evening, and at the end of the study group, we were standing in prayer circle, and without any advance warning, my head tilted back, my eyes looking up to the sky, and out of my mouth came a prayer that I would be a sacred vessel, and the Spirit would move through me, the Spirit would speak through me, that Sacred Spirit would work through me in whatever way needed to take place. I became obsessed at that time with tarot cards, and I slept with 4 or 5 decks under my pillow. I studied them night and day, and I believed then, still believe, that they serve as a doorway between the conscious mind and the unconscious mind, the subconscious mind, so that spirit can move through that doorway using the visual influence of the cards to help us receive information. And I believe that was a step in my process to become their voice. They came to me in September of 2014 and told me I have a new job, told me I have a new name, showed me my new job, which is to receive and deliver messages for what they referred to as the agents in the field. I cried when they gave me my new name. They said my name is She Gives Voice. And so I am their voice. I provide the way for their messages to become audibly heard, received by people in the world, so that they can do their work. That's the brief accounting of how we work, the brief accounting of our process.
Wow, that's remarkable. What do you think, Mark?
Yeah, it's one thing that popped in my head as she was talking about it is that and some of the quantum science guys saying that, you know, they don't even think our mind is actually in our brain or our body. It's outside, and our brain is simply a receiver. And I'm thinking, as she was talking about and the different information and stuff, that a crystal skull might be similar in terms of it may be just as much of a receiver as everything encoded into it. It could be both. It could be pulling in stuff from outside of its just physical crystal skull, just like our self, we pull stuff from somewhere else too. So I was wondering what Cindy thought about maybe that, if she think there's something to that.
I certainly feel like a receiver. I feel that way most of the time, because much of the information that comes to me is quite surprising in its content, something that I, on an ongoing basis, I feel like I would not have thought of on my own. Frequently, they will give me specific words or specific phrasing, and frequently I go to the dictionary and look up these words that they've given to me because I have a rough idea of what they mean, but when I read their actual meaning, it gives new understanding, new power to the messages that they bring me. And I do believe that they, the skulls both transmit, receive, and as you pointed out, are encoded, are previously encoded, because when they come to you, each one will give you insight as to their work, their purpose for connecting with us, their purpose for ensuring that they were recovered, if you will, from wherever they were found and brought out into the world to work with us. I also know that as a group, the 13 ancient skulls and all of their representatives are in constant contact, constant communication, that they interact with each other. I had asked our supplier years ago I wanted a large crystal skull. I wasn't asking for an ancient skull. I was asking for a modern carving, but I wanted one that was made of clear quartz. So he, some months go by, and then he calls me and he tells me that he's got the clear quartz skull for me. And I told him that we were working in Wichita, and he said, well, I'm in Oklahoma City, so I'll just jump on the highway and bring it to you. So unbeknownst to me, where he was when he called me in Oklahoma City, he was with the ancient skull Max. And he set this clear quartz skull on the table with Max, I don't know for how long, and then brought it to us in Wichita. So when this clear quartz skull arrived in Wichita, it started talking to me about being in the sand near the ocean and watching the sun rise and watching the sun set there from its position in the sand near the water, and then watching the lady pick up her skirt in her hands and walk around the skull in the sand in her bare feet. And then they went to Sedona and talked on and on about Sedona and the red earth of Sedona and being in a prayer circle where everyone sang and everyone prayed in the red earth of Sedona. And so I ended up calling this skull Sedona. And then I came to understand this skull was sharing with me things that Max had shared with it when they sat together on the table, because this skull had gone from the carver to my supplier to me, had not been to those places. that it was talking about with me. So I knew it was sharing Max's memories with me. I'd like to talk for a minute about the legend of the 13 ancient crystal skulls. Are both of you familiar with that legend?
A little bit, huh?
Yeah, somewhat. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So as you know, that legend exists in virtually every native society on Earth, and the two of you are very keenly aware of how many native societies that would be when we talk about virtually all of the native societies on Earth. So the legend says that the 13 ancient crystal skulls will come back into our awareness at a time that is crucial in the evolution of Earth and crucial in the evolution of mankind. One of the things that I find very interesting about that legend is that word back. They will come back into our awareness. So that means at some point back there, we all knew when they were made and where they were made and why they were made and how they were made and who made them. And we understood when to use them, where to use them, why to use them, how to use them. You know, still today they are recognized as a very important part of sacred belief and religious practice. And there are people in other parts of the world who use them in their homes every day because they are recognized as containing the knowledge of the ancestors and the wisdom of the ancients. But the thing that absolutely intrigues me most about the legend of the 13 ancient crystal skulls is that the ancients literally could have seeded anything here for us to recover at this time, for us to find, to help us at this critical juncture of Earth, this critical juncture of mankind. They could have seeded crystal toes or crystal elbows or crystal dog biscuits. They could have seeded literally anything, and crystal skulls are what they chose. Now, you were talking, Badger, about the receiver-transmitter aspect, and I believe that the dome shape of the skull has a lot to do with the receiver-transmitter aspect. In combination with the electrical impulses of the brain. But, of course, crystal skulls don't have brains in them any longer. Those that were at one time part of a living, breathing being, and certainly those that are stone, don't have brains in them anymore. But I do believe that domed aspect has something to do with their process. It also tells me that crystal skulls have to be very important, or they would have seeded something other than crystal skulls.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
Well, mm-hmm. The skull is we tend to, if you look at all the things that the skull means, and, you know, if you look at the traditions, you know, the skull also contains the sixth and seventh chakra points too. So, and that would be something that many of those cultures would probably be aware of as well. And the so that and just the symbolism of the skull being the intellect, the consciousness, and awareness and stuff, symbolic of that. So, and the repository of where we perceive that our memory is stored. So it has a lot of symbolic things in it. But the other thing too, there are also the crystal skulls, and 13 of them are actually within, also symbolic, connected back into the Mayan Zolcan calendar itself.
To the number of moon cycles or some other aspect?
To the actual, there are actually 13 skull days in the Zolcan calendar.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting.
So I believe that those will, and if you take those 13 days and you unify them into one, which is what the prophecy mentions. The prophecy talks about, you know, the 13 skulls coming together, right?
Yes. Yes.
So they come together, but they're not just necessarily just coming together, sitting around in a physical circle, but they literally come together.
Yes.
So, you know, they unify. And you can actually take those 13 skull days in the Mayan Zolcan calendar, and you can unify them, and they'll point, and they'll point into another day within the calendar.
Hmm.
So,
a specific day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do they point to a specific day?
Yeah. Yeah. So one. It's a very specific day, and the interesting thing about that day is it also is connected to one of those other crystal skull days too, the first one.
Is that a future date, or has that date come and gone?
No, it's not a date like we look at dates in the calendar. It's a day in the Zolcan calendar, so those days repeat, you know, every 260 days the full Zolcan swings past. So it's repeating all the time. But it is interesting that there are actually 13 skull days within the Zolcan calendar that could be seen as connecting into the actual crystal skulls themselves. And it may be that the unification of those days actually gives information about the unification of the actual physical crystal skulls.
People ask,
there's probably a relationship between the two.
I'm sure there is. That is not an accident. People ask frequently they will ask how many of the ancient skulls have been found, have been recovered, how many of the ancient skulls are active, and they ask about the 13 ancient skulls coming back together, as the legend states. First of all, I believe that there are many ancient crystal skulls. I believe that there are 13 primary, if you will, and I believe each of the 13 primary have 13 ancient skulls, and each of those have 13, so it goes out, that number goes out exponentially. But as far as the 13 primary ancient skulls coming together in a circle like you mentioned, I believe, as you do, that event very likely will not take place, but it does not have to take place, because the 13 ancient skulls remain in communication, whether they are active, whether they are dormant, they remain connected and remain in communication, which is similar to what you're saying.
Well, would be like that. It's probably more of an aspect of us being aware of them being connected, and that's the unification might be more in our own awareness and consciousness rather than theirs.
To blend in the energy of each of the 13, is that to blend that into your consciousness, into your awareness? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, the understanding of the the unification of it.
Yes.
And that's where the same thing would apply to not just to crystal skulls, but to all these things, you know, where a lot of these sacred communications and things going on appear to me to be leading in the same direction. They all appear to be leading us to a path of unifying our consciousness with Creator.
I agree with you very much that we must unify, that we basically must stand together in a way that gives unconditional love to each other and an honoring of each other. It doesn't mean that we have to have identical belief system to that person standing next to us, but it does mean that we need to honor them. We need to give them that unconditional love, that respect. That unification, I believe, is essential to the continuation of mankind at this time. Is that what you believe?
Yeah, I think we definitely, it'll probably happen. It's just a question of when, and the longer it takes, the more we just kind of suffer along the way until we just figure out what we're doing.
Yes.
And do it. We just shoot ourselves in the foot all the time, you know. So, yeah, it's.
Mm-hmm.
But we, you know, and I think all these things are doing that. I mean, it's pretty painfully obvious, you know. If Creator made all of us and made this entire creation, which is much bigger than we can ever dream or imagine of, you know, then obviously all those things put in the creation have a purpose, and also, you know, they're important to Creator. Otherwise, why make them? So they're intended for them all to kind of be together and work together, and it's just a matter of us going along with the plan and getting our act together, I think.
Right, and in keeping with what you're saying, because all of these things, all of these peoples, all of these things were made by Creator, it is our job to honor and respect that. As something put here, something made deliberately, specifically to be part of this process by the Sacred Creator, to not honor that, to not give that unconditional love to me, is to dishonor Creator.
Well, yeah, if we look at it too from some of the native cultures, they get very specific and they say that all these other things are part of ourself.
Yes.
Part of
yes.
ourself, part of Creator, we're part of Creator, so it's all connected into one thing. And so, if you have problems with one part of it, it eventually comes back and it's like biting off your own finger, you know, if you're attacking someone else. It eventually affects you, comes back. And, you know, most of our traditions and cultures around the world have that in their core. If people dig around and look at it, so it's there for everybody. It's just that, you know, and most of us seem to say that we agree with it. We just have a hard time doing it.
Yes.
You
yes,
know?
We do. That is our human fallacy, unfortunately.
Well, we got all kinds of things we're juggling in there. You know, we got emotions, we got this, we got all kinds of things, and of course, other things come in and more than happy to turn us against each other and use it for whatever purposes, make money, get power, whatever it is, something, you know, and screw it all up. And we are juggling a lot of things in our emotions, our thinking, our history, our cultures, and all this stuff. And, you know, it's pretty easy to have it, you know, backfire on us and have problems. But I think it also points to a great potential if we do unify and do some of the things and respect each other and do learn how to do it the right way and work with Creator on doing it. And that's the key part, is if we work with Creator and we see everything as an extension and part of Creator, then and see each other that way, then that changes, you know, our outlook a little bit, maybe helps us get back on track.
Yes, very much. And that is the appropriate viewpoint, the appropriate perspective. I would like to talk for a little bit about the ones who have shown up, the ones who have come asking me to provide voice for them. Would this be an appropriate time for us to get into that?
Sure.
Sure.
Okay. Ash, as I said earlier, came in 2004. When he came, he told me he wanted to sit with groups of people, give them the opportunity to ask him questions, and he would answer through me. We started doing that in 2005, and at the end of 2009, he told me those sessions are called wisdom gatherings, and I thought, well, of course, what else would they be? So very early in 2012, he told me that I would speak for more than one, and I was like a little child. Who will that be, and when will that come, and when will it happen, and what will it look like? And basically, he told me, don't worry about it. So very early in 2012, a friend of ours from Oklahoma City brought in one of the other ancient jade skulls. He always says his name as if it were one word, Gaia, male, energy of Earth. And he and I have had long talks about if you are male, don't you want to be Gaius or some other form of the name Gaia? Because we think of Gaia as female. Basically, he told me that is our issue, not his. So when Gaia is with us, which he occasionally visits, I provide voice for him as well. Somewhere around 2007, we were blessed to receive a modern carving, beautiful blue apatite skull. People will tell you that she appears to be alien. She has always said that she is mermaid. In summer of 2012, our friend who brought in Gaia brought in another one of the beautiful blue apatite skulls, alien in appearance. She also says that she is mermaid. Osh's primary companion, the one that's been with him since around 2007, her name is, she pronounces it Zahrina. I believe that you and I would say Zahrina. And I am embarrassed to tell both of you how long it took me to figure out that the Zahrina is the mate of the Tsar. That took me way too long. Zahrina and her elder sister, Mahreen, the one who lives in Oklahoma City, they want us to once again remember, once again honor the Sea People. And I was shocked to begin to learn about the ancient cave drawings, and the ancient rock art that shows the Sea People quite stunned to begin to learn about their long history. So when Zahrina suddenly announced the first weekend of November 2012 that I would speak for her and the Sea People, first of all, I was very stunned that a modern carving that had been with us for about 5 years at that point, that she would suddenly announce that I would speak for her and the Sea People. But I thought that all the Sea People meant mermaids. They were some form of mermaid. I have come to understand from them that anything that lives in water for them is a sea person. So they have quite their own following. It's really interesting to watch them work, because people who have no intention of stopping at our booth, no intention of coming to see the skulls, I say that they reach out with the old vaudeville hook and just hook people, draw them in. People bring them flowers, they bring them jewelry, they bring them cards, they sing to them, they have their own following. So as I was trying to wrap my mind around Zahrina's announcement that I would speak for her and the Sea People, at that time in my life, I was sleeping with every night with a skull that had been purchased by a very good friend of ours, a Greek Orthodox minister who lives in Midland, Texas, had purchased a skull from us, handed him to me. She asked me, "Cindy, who is this?" And out of my mouth came, "This is Crazy Horse," and I started to cry. And she says she will tell you that she left him with me because she knew that we had work to do together. So I sleep with all my skulls. I want to know, what will they do when I sleep with them? Will they teach me all night? Will they heal me all night? Will they keep me awake all night? What are they going to do? Well, I had been sleeping with him for probably 3 to 4 months at that time. And about 2 weeks after her announcement in November 2012, he started coming to me in dream time, the most incredible dreams that I have ever experienced. And the first thing he said to me was, "I found my head in a lake, and now you have it." And I woke up and I thought, what? What does that mean? Do I have something that I'm not supposed to have? I'm not giving you back, but what does that mean? And so my husband, bless his heart, all I have to do is say, "Honey, I had a dream," and he runs away because he doesn't want to hear any more of my dreams. So he was driving, and I said to him, "Honey, I had a dream." And I began to describe the dream, and we talked quite a bit about Crazy Horse. And because I told him I was just sure it was Crazy Horse that came to me in dream time. And I described him. I said, this man was small. He had light skin. He had gray hair. And my husband said, Crazy Horse was very young when he died. He did have light skin. He was a small man. So I went back into meditation, and I said to him, why do you appear to me as an old man? You were very young when you died. He said, my spirit was strong. I lived on. So I am to call him Grandfather Crazy Horse because he is an elder now. And he comes to teach that we are, in fact, energy. He says that we have bought into the notion that we are this physical form. And because we believe we are this physical form, we believe we are limited. And he wants us to once again know, once again honor, once again walk in and work in the fact that we are energy. And one of the first things he showed me, which I initially thought to be a marvelous demonstration, was standing in the middle of the universe and doing healing work on the sun. And yes, I thought it was a marvelous demonstration. I have come to understand just how important it is that we do energy work on the sun right now. The sun is in a natural cycle that causes great volatility. In this particular cycle, that volatility could have significant effects on Earth. So he talked about us doing healing energy on the sun to help it through this cycle without that volatility that could have such dramatic effects on Earth. There is one that is a fairly new addition, a modern carving, a clear quartz skull that was recovered out of a mine in the Hot Springs, Arkansas area. Her carving, very little carving has been done to her. Basically, she looks almost exactly as she did when she came out of the mine. And people who would find her, people who would participate in that process, would say that she was a crystal that was found in the mine. She has a very unusual shape. You can see the shape of her head. You can see her nose, her mouth. There's a natural point still on the back of her head. The man who found her will tell you that when he trips in the mine over absolutely nothing, he knows that is where he is supposed to dig. So he found this crystal in the mine. He and his wife both instantly felt the amazing energy, recognized her, even though she was this raw crystal that they had just recovered. He tried to smooth her. She immediately shot off shards, told him she did not want to be smooth. He started the process of adding eyes. As an artist, he would tell you that he is not done with her. She will tell you that she is done. She looks very aquatic. Almost like a giant eel. I can't help but think maybe water dragon when I look at her. She will tell you that her name is Zara, C-Z-A-R-A, Zara, that she is the Pleiadian queen. And many of the other skulls call her mother. She has a lot to do in terms of a lot of work to do to talk about our work and guiding us through our work at this time. Even though Ash and Gaia are both part of that group of jade skulls that came out of an emperor's grave, Ash is more of a teacher. When people ask him questions, he talks to them about the right way to see things or the right way to approach whatever it is that they're working on in their lives. Gaia is more of a healer. It's very interesting to watch them work. When people come into the booth, we have them set up for people to sit with, to work with, because that is what they want to do. That is who they are. We do not charge for that process, but we ask that people are respectful when they come for that. We have rules for the process. So some people will say, I just love sitting with Osh. I just can't get enough of that energy. And then they'll say, I get nothing at all from Gaia. And then the next person will come and say, I just love sitting with Gaia. I love that energy. I get nothing at all from Osh. Or there are people who love to work with both. It's a very interesting process as we provide them in different areas for people to work with. It's very interesting to watch them work.
Well, I guess. Wow. Well, your life is exciting nowadays.
Yes, it is. It is. And sometimes it's juggling to keep up with it, and I'm sure you know that process as well.
Yeah, mostly when I was younger. Yeah, life dumps a whole bunch. Oh, speaking of anxiety, I thought we'd take. You probably got more to say, but I just wanted to share. People may have heard me talk about the physical problems that my wife has had with anxiety, and was this last couple of months something interesting has happened. Her, of course, nowadays in the healthcare system in this country, to get pain pills, you got to go to a pain doctor. To go to mental health pills, you got to go to a mental health center or whatever, and they got it all split up. But anyway, she, from time to time, to give you some background, Cindy, my wife is 66, and she was sexually abused by her dad starting at age 5 for about 5 or 6 years. And she suffered quite a bit from anxiety, and she doesn't like to take pills, but when the anxiety got so bad, you know, she would take a Xanax. Well, Xanax can be very, very, very addictive, and that's the reason why she didn't like to take a lot of them, but, you know, she took them as a last resort. Well, last month it was announced that her good friend, her mental health worker, was retiring because she was having some physical problems, and they had taken Linda off Xanax briefly, and we're going to put her back on. Well, that didn't get put back in the notes, and when this lady quit, you can imagine Linda was wondering, well, my gosh, I may have to go an entire month without a Xanax. So anyway, I said, well, look, I said, you know, we've been talking about going herbal for quite some time, and I was holding my fingers. I didn't know. Well, there's a place here in Crossville called Warner's Herbs, and of course I looked for something that had, you know, several herbs, because when you approach anything, you want to have more than one herb because of the power that what's the word I'm looking for? I'm having a brain fart tonight. Synergy. Well, anyway, went and got her a couple of things, and wow, they worked really well. And she hasn't. She went from taking at least one Xanax a day for the last couple of months, and so this has happened before, like when she's had IBS flare-ups, and hadn't had a Xanax since, and. So she'd had sleep problems, too, and problems getting to sleep. And so Warner's has got a sleep combination of herbs. And so want to let folks know, thank you for the prayers. We found something to help Linda. And because it's been a real ordeal.
That is great news, because it is not easy to drop Xanax. If you have connection for tumbled stones, I would recommend for her a stone called Bloodstone. Bloodstone is a powerful healer, but it's also excellent for healing in relationships. It is one that I particularly recommend for sexual abuse victims, because it is extremely likely that that person will never get to sit across the table from their perpetrator and sort things out. So I recommend Bloodstone. It's excellent for helping in the emotional healing. I would also like to see your wife with some rose quartz because it's a very gentle reminder to help you love yourself and love others. And she may at times struggle in loving herself. So those would be very beneficial for her.
Oh, outstanding. Well, you guys are only like a year apart. She was born in 49. So
yes.
August 49. So she's just a little bit older than you are. Very insightful. I wouldn't, you know, the whole thing. Well, you know, you talked about not wanting to get involved with skulls. Well, you know, way back, you know, when I was just starting to walk the red road, we were leery of the entire New Age thing. But I was willing to look at some different things. So the very first thing we tried was working with stones of different colors.
Yes.
And, oh, my gosh, it was we had a – I don't even think I've ever told Mark this story, but that was really – what got us to take that step across that line, and you know, Creator, you know, showed us some healing. And I've been widowed twice. My wives have always all been older. My first wife was 8 years older. Second wife 12 years older. And first wife had cancer in the family. Her mother died at 51, and her niece died in her 20s. And yeah, that was what kind of walked us into the whole thing. And I used to set up, of course, in Utah, there's a lot of rock shops. And
yes.
So whenever we hit a rock shop, you know, we go looking for stones in the right colors. And I collected stones on the 7 different colors. It's Cherokee, so we do 7. And crazy people, you know. and yeah, you used to keep a little altar there in the house. And it's really something, because there's a lot of things the stones can do. I think we all know that by now. So.
You're right. They're part of divine creation, put here for a purpose. They don't just look pretty. They do wonderful things for us. You are exactly right.
That's right.
And
well,
made it simple. Yeah. They're color-coded, so they're easy to use.
Yeah, right. Well, stones are one of the vehicles, other than Balaam's ass, you know, the Bible talks about God speaking through stones. We had to get over our bigotry against the stones. But, yeah, we had come out of a period in the early 80s learning about how the New Age movement had been co-opted by some negative forces, and don't want to go into that because, you know, there's it's a journey through all this.
Yes, it is.
No. But, you know, so we approached it, you know, not from cynicism, but from extreme caution. And but it sure has made life more fun.
Yes, it can be very fun. And one of the things that I do like about the New Age community is that each person finds their own path within it. Most of us are a blending, a little bit this, a little bit that. But... we are, it's a, more of a blending, a coming together of faiths that are usually seen as, quote, outside the box. You know, we don't fit in the traditional boxes of the world.
Yeah, that kind of rankles people sometimes. You know, one of the first things I ran into was Orthodox Indians. You know, if you don't think like I think, and I won't mention any particular tribes, but I think we all know, you know. And you don't just have to be I almost said it. Anyway, you don't have to be one of those folks to but there's this kind of a racism that runs through Native America too, and I think we're slowly getting over all that too, but yeah, it's kind of unnerving, you know, when you start running across people who have seemingly just fantastic, you know, some people might think they're whacked, you know, but they're, you know, like, it's like, I remember what I used to think about vortexes, you know, that was, you know, everything was, you know, but, you know, I didn't realize, well, hey, you know, some people are more sensitive to these things, and there's, you just have to remember when you run across something that seems nutty or you're crazy, that there is no end to the way that spirit operates.
Yes, thankfully, and you know, we're not all supposed to be a duplicate of each other. Think what a boring world that would be if we were all exactly alike. Each one of us has our own skill set, our own ability, and we need to bring all of those together into the perfect weaving to be the whole that Creator intended.
Absolutely. But I do need to cut things a little bit short today. Let me tell you why. Unless you have a whole lot more to say, the reason why I want to leave some time on here is I got a Facebook message from Joy Graves. Joy, you know, Auckland Native American Church is going through the legal processes of letting everybody in the federal government and know that, hey, you know, it's okay to mail, you know, cannabis a sacrament. She ran into some a recalcitrant postmaster in Portland, and so that's our next legal challenge. And she was responsible for getting cannabis recognized as a legal sacrament in the state of Oregon. So and the White House has written up on it. There's a lot of things that are going on, but Joy wanted to get on the air, so I thought I would leave a little extra time on this so I could splice in her talk just as soon as I can get a hold of her. But
okay. Well, thank you for having us. We enjoyed very much being on with the two of you tonight. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Appreciate you, too. And we'll let everybody go, and then when I'm able to get Joy on here too, I'll let everybody know that that they can come and listen and be able to listen to Joy also. Well, thanks a lot, folks. Thanks a lot, Mark.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Talk
good
to
night.
You next week. Good night now.
Join us to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Remember who I am.